Carl, you've had some rants on this particular program, and
yes.
I have something that I want us to both consider, but I need to set the scene for your edification so you can then make an intelligent comment.
I try.
All right? Okay.
I try.
Google has been archiving millions, tens of millions of Life magazine photos from the 1860s to the present. They may be finished with this by now. I don't know. But I happened to click on the link and found an astonishing number of photos in the categorized collection. I sifted through some from the Civil War in the 1880s and beyond, and then to the 1910 category. That caught my attention because I had remembered that I had an Uncle Jack who fought in World War I with a Canadian infantry unit. Now, I don't know much about Uncle Jack, except that he was a stepbrother of my father. He was about 15 years older than my dad, and certainly a great influence on my dad. I never met Jack, but I just heard stories about him. Now, there was one picture in this Google collection taken in April of 1917. It was a photo of a Canadian regiment climbing out of their trenches and going over the top, as they used to call it during World War I.
Yep.
Artillery shells were bursting in air. You could see it. The soldiers were carrying British Lee Enfield rifles, which were issued to virtually all British Commonwealth soldiers on the Western Front. The Lee Enfield was a 10-cartridge magazine, well-suited to rapid fire, and a soldier could expect to fire 12 shots a minute in those days. Now, it's possible that my Uncle Jack was in that picture. I don't know. But I can imagine that he had similar experiences. Carl, my Uncle Jack survived the war, but like so many returning combat veterans from the Gulf and Afghanistan, he could not survive coming home. He committed suicide sometime after the war ended. Now, war does things to those who are asked to fight it and to kill. War is an unnatural condition, in my mind, in which we have to live. Some make it through okay and go on to lead productive lives. Others, like my uncle, could not let go of the pain, the fog, or the psychological wounds of battle with images of dead bodies and slain bodies. Medicine makes no bandage to heal wartime memories. Now, I'm going back to look at that picture again off and on and wonder about the uncle I never met. I'll also wonder why humankind hasn't learned very much in 100 years.
Oh, boy. Well, my dear friend, we've spoken about this before. As Byron noted, war is a game of fools. There are never any winners in war. And in this instance, the wounded soldiers, those who've come home today and back through our time, from all countries. I had uncles, had seven uncles who fought in World War II.
Hmm.
Three of them did not do well. Alcoholics, all died very young. Sure. Never got out of the 60s and passed away. Alcoholics who could not, we didn't call it post-traumatic stress syndrome at the time.
No, they didn't know what that was.
No, wasn't discussed. But they surely suffered from it. And passed on very, very quickly. The point is that frankly, we haven't learned a damn thing. and it amazes me when we look at what's happening in the Middle East today, which is, in my opinion, beyond words. What has creeped out of the last century of war, where 100 million, they claim 60 million, I'm convinced the number is so much higher. I'm going to say 100 million people lost their lives. Some slaughtered for no particular reason at all, the fact they were a different color, race, or creed.
In which war are you talking about?
World War II and World War One.
It may well be more than that.
It may well be more
globally,
than that.
Globally, totally.
Globally. Yeah. Maybe more than that. But we haven't learned our lesson. And now look what we have. coming out of the Middle East.
All right, let's change the subject.
Yes.
We talked about World War I, World War II, et cetera, et cetera. Now, we've got a situation in the Middle East that's very, very tenuous, very, very volatile.
Yes.
I'm going to ask you a question that many people might be asking, or maybe not. I have no idea. We have the capability, technologically, in the world today, to do limited nuclear weapons. Do you see ever a possibility where there might be a situation where the United States or anybody else would use a limited nuclear weapon in order to defeat the current perceived threat in the Middle East?
Yes.
Whoa, that was quick.
That it doesn't take long, because I believe that, though I have no fact to this point, and I cannot have source to state it, but I believe that option has been put in front of the President of the United States. That is my term guesstimation.
Wouldn't he always have that option in any situation?
In a theatrical theater of war, probably yes. Yeah. Operational theater, but at this particular point in time, yes to that answer. Because we're getting to a point where...
Can we morally do that? Should we morally do that?
It gets back to the...
Or is it not a moral question?
It is a moral question. It's the whole moral question of war, which again is the stupidity of mankind, upon which we still, after all of these centuries and centuries, haven't gotten the message that it doesn't help us. The most productive period of our lives has always come if the planet would look, come when we're not at war. And I'm talking about 1955 through the 60s and into the 70s before Vietnam. This planet grew, and there was engagement upon the planet, education and healthcare and so on. And then, of course, we slipped off into this Cold War period, and the rest is history. My point is that it comes a time when we must be direct, we must be decisive, we must be brutal as the enemy upon which we face. And it's a sad point.
Well,
now, and I, again, I take it with, I say that.
I have time for rebuttal here coming.
You do. Okay. And we do have time for rebuttal, but you may. But that is your question is asked and answered.
Well, it certainly, you have the right to your opinion and to the ascertainment of your answer based upon how you perceive American abilities and willingness to be in this day and age.
In this particular case, if I may correct, I just want to make sure that we understand this. I am speaking directly about the current threat in the Middle East.
You're right. Yes. I agree.
These are animals, but they must be eliminated.
I'm going to go back 30, 40, 50 years. When I was a kid, the threat of nuclear war was very, very imminent,
yes,
or possible, because of what we had the Cold War between the Soviet Union in those days, which is now Russia, and the United States. And you figure from Eisenhower's time on, after the Korean War, when the Cold War really started, the wall was being built in Berlin. I remember as a little kid having these exercises in school where you got under your desk to
protect yourself.
Them
well.
I mean, this is stupid.
Yes.
I mean, if a nuclear war...
We were going to die under our desks.
I mean, yeah.
We were going to die under our desks crouched like chickens. I never understood that. Even as kids, we didn't get it. We were going to die here.
Well, I remember being told to bring in a very small toy that you could hand hold to amuse yourself while you're under your desk.
Oh, for God's
this sake. Was, I mean, as I as an adult, a much older adult, I mean, I said to myself, why would adults even consider doing that to the children, to us children?
Do we understand today, Roland, that and I don't believe that we do, that in the human capacity for kindness and caring, sharing and the spiritual nature of the religious belief upon which we have, if that is not prominent on the planet, then what do we do?
Well, to me, the only answer is universal love. One has to find a way to love what you dislike, to love what you don't understand, and to love each other unconditionally.
Yes, and we do try, but it has not been a fun battle.
I don't think we try very hard. I think there are saints out there. I mean, there was Gandhi and Mother Teresa,
without question,
and Martin Luther King Jr. And there's so many out there who preached nothing but love and were the evidence of it.
We've been to the top of the mountain and we've seen the other side. Let us hope the other side says to us, please listen and see what you see and put that into action. I'm hoping they do.
Well, wouldn't that be nice?
Carl Sabatino with Roland Smith. This is Smith Sabatino on America Weekend on the Envision Radio Networks. We'll be back. Stay with us. America Weekend.
America Weekend. Order in the court.
This is attorney Jay Coleman with The Final Verdict. Recently, Jennifer Zuniga was arrested after she was captured on video encouraging her minor son to beat up another boy. And as the boys bloody each other, Jennifer can be seen on YouTube yelling, "Body slam him," and assuring the boys that they have permission to fight in her yard. As irresponsible as this sounds, what exactly was Jennifer charged with? The final verdict after this.
Don't try to fight the IRS on your own. Use Coast One Financial Group and let them help you get a fresh start. Dial 877-219-8780. That's 877-219-8780.
The mother who encouraged her minor son to beat up another boy was charged with child endangerment and contributing to the delinquency of a minor. And that's the final verdict.
Welcome to American Biker Minute. Moving the bike around in a parking space can be a tricky maneuver. Fortunately, every motorcycle built since the 1970s is equipped with a safety device to reduce slow motion tip overs. Today on American Biker Minute.
Do you have troubled skin or acne? With Proactive Plus, your acne can heal and you can help prevent new breakouts from happening. Call Proactive Plus now and receive a 60-day risk-free trial along with two free extras and free shipping. Call 800-393-6139. That's 1-800-393-6139.
Jeff Ryan for American Biker Minute. The slow motion balancing act. The two-wheel ballet. Bikes are difficult to balance when doing three-point turns, like in the garage or in a parking space. Applying pressure to the front brake lever holds the motorcycle in place so the rider can concentrate on balance. When three-pointing out of tight places, the bike will not slip away. Learn to use the front brake in tight places. The front brake, the biker's best three-point friend. Safety first. American Biker Minute, your passport to the open road on two wheels.